About a quarter mile outside of town, Ezra Welp crouched on the brushy desert beside his grazing horse and slowly shook his head while absently scratching at his neck.
What the hell happened here, anyway?
There hadn't been a blessed living thing here, aside from the usual snakes and bug critters, the last time he was through. But now it seemed like somebody had not only built a good-sized stockade and chopped down practically every single tree that had once lined the bank of the creek, but had sent to California for a wagon train. At least, that was what parked along the stockade's southern wall. He assumed it was the same wagon train whose path he'd been following for the past few days. At long last, he stood up and mounted his horse, having decided to go ahead and ride in, if only to see what the hell was really going on. Just as well, because just as he settled down into the saddle and got his reins adjusted, a big, ugly dog near the wagon spotted him. He would have just shot the damn thing, but it was on the end of a rope or something, and the other end looked to be held by a lanky kid.
Get you later, dog.
He moved his hand away from his holster. For the time being, anyhow. Ezra Welp didn't make promises he didn't keep. He moved his horse ahead, down the gentle slope, and toward the stockade. Father Clayton got to Jason's office at roughly the same time Jason did. Fortunately, Jason thought, he'd held it to one beer across the street, and so he was a sober man when the father announced he wished to talk. Jason motioned the priest into the chair opposite his, then sat down himself.
What can I help you with, Father?
Your fine neighbors across the street, Dr. and Mrs. Morelli, have seen fit to let me stay under their roof while I peruse your town.
What do you want to talk about, Father?
The church I intend to build in Fury.
Well, aren't we full of ourselves? You intend to build a parish here? Does Fury have enough Catholics to make that worthwhile?
Oh, my, yes, indeed it does. By my count, it's over 70 souls, with a number of others with no place to worship.
If that was a sideways slam at Milcher, Jason supposed it was well placed. But he figured the town needed something besides a Catholic mission to keep it morally proper, whatever that was. In his opinion, the town was pretty moral just as it was.
Gee, that many.
Do you doubt my count, son?
Not at all. And please, just call me Jason.
Very well, then. I've chosen the best location for the mission. It will be more mission than church, I believe. And I need to discover who owns the lot. I'm told that you know everyone, and are therefore the person to ask.
And which parcel has appealed to you, Father?
The lot just down the street from your office, Marshal. Just two doors away.
And nobody owns it?
No one?
Well, nobody's claimed it yet.
Can I claim it? In the church's name, of course.
Well, you're as welcome to it as anyone, I suppose.
Do I need to sign something?
Nope. Just build on it, and then it's yours.
Marvelous! Just marvelous! You don't know how welcome this news is, Marshal.
And welcome to Fury, Father Clayton.
Please, call me Father Micah. That's Micah with an H on the end.
All right, Father Micah. Good luck.
No. Thank you, Marshal. I mean Jason. Marshal Jason, or just Jason.
Just Jason, Father.
Yes. Well!
So, the Holy Roman Empire now has a stake in Fury. I wonder if they'll be of any help with the Indians or Samson Davis.
Jason went back to work. Jason didn't discover until later that afternoon where the town fathers planned to build their water tower.
But you can't. There's a Catholic mission going in there.
Salmon Kendall, who had given him the news, stood across his desk, handing him the weekly newspaper.
But we've already decided, Jason.
Salmon, all buildings to be erected have to be cleared through this office, and that means me.
You were drinking at the time.
Jason just stared at him, wondering why he couldn't back down like a normal person, and where the hell Marshal Todd was. He'd been going to go up to the boarding house to have a word or two with Samson Davis, and Jason had been waiting to hear something from him for several hours, but nothing. Not a blessed peep.
So anyway, we're sending a contingent up into the Bradshaws first thing in the morning. The Slade brothers have spent the entire afternoon getting the wagons ready. I've been to the mercantile and bought saws and awls and dried beans and such, as well as rope from Solomon, and my wife's been cooking all day so they don't starve to death on their own grub. Just thought you'd want to know.
Salmon dropped the paper on Jason's desk. Jason just glanced at it.
Find another place to put up your water tower, Salmon.
Afraid not. The site's centrally located. It's level, and that's where we picked. The Catholics can put their mission any place. The end lot, by the saloon, for instance. Or the next street over. There's plenty of room back there.
Damn it, Salmon, I gave my word, the word of the town, to the father when I said he could have the lot, and I will not go back on it.
I'll have a word with the father then.
Do what you want.
Jason picked up the paper. Salmon left, and when he was gone, Jason just sat there, shaking his head.
What do you people want from me anyway?
But he already knew the answer. They wanted somebody to do the dirty jobs they couldn't be troubled with, like handle the likes of Teddy Gunderson or the perennially hysterical Matt McDonald, or organizing them when they really were under attack. And the rest of the time, he could just go hang.
Well, maybe I will. Maybe I'll just ride on out of here and get myself back east, where I belong.
But first, he had to check on Abe Todd. He hoped he wouldn't find him chock full of Sampson Davis's bullets.
On the other hand, it'd solve a plethora of problems for me.
He didn't find Abe across the street in the saloon, nor did he find him, or any trace of Davis for that matter, at the boarding house or the cafe. He walked over to the stable, found nothing, then stuck his head into Abigail's place. Still nothing, not even a lousy card cheat. Scratching his head, he leaned against a post outside the mercantile and stared down the street. A few moments later, he was rewarded by the sight of Abe Todd coming out of the barbershop, looking slicked up and shiny as a new penny.
What is this? Some kind of marshal's ritual, like slick up before you shoot? Maybe I should say afterwards.
Todd spotted him, and waving, began to walk toward him. Jason moved forward, too, and met him in the center of the single long block that made up Main Street.
Been waiting on you. What's going on with Davis?
Got me. I couldn't find him, so I went to the barber instead.
Well, his horse is still at the stable.
Well, I guess he's disappeared then. Where else is there?
The wagon train?
Worth a little hunt.
But when they got up by the gate, Todd didn't turn to go outside.
Hang on a second.
Instead, he walked forward toward the schoolhouse. Or at least, what passed for a schoolhouse in fury.
You're not going to find him in there.
Not looking for him.
Abe Todd stepped inside the little schoolhouse. The door closed behind him.
Well, you want something done right? I guess you gotta do it yourself.
Jason strode on through the gates, out to where the wagons lined the wall. Ezra Welk hadn't wasted any time once he rode into Fury. He found the livery and put up his horse, then grabbed a beer at Abigail's, which he found was practically deserted. But she gave him directions to the boarding house, where he was presently ensconced. Sitting in a chair beside the window, he looked out over the street below. There was a marshal's office, no way to tell if it was federal or local from here. And while he watched, a Catholic priest went in for a few minutes, then came out smiling and practically jigging his way up the street. And then the law came out.
Local, by the looks of him. Young, too. Probably green as grass. I don't have anything to worry about here in Fury.
There was a saloon right at the end of the street, and it looked, and sounded, quite a bit more lively than Abigail's place had been. He watched while the so-called marshal made his way out of the saloon and ambled up the street. And only then did he stand up, light himself a new smoke, and make his way downstairs and outside to the street. Not a third of the way down the line, Jason ran into Dr. Morelli, who looked sour and pale.
What's wrong?
It's a day for death, Jason. I have a feeling that Frank Salamunk will be dead before the sun sets.
Who?
The fellow who was hit by the saguaro.
Yeah. Well, he gone septic?
And he's getting worse as fast as I've ever seen. He'll leave that wife and those children behind to fend for themselves. Oh, it's a shame, a real shame.
It sure is. You seen Sampson Davis today, Doc?
No, I haven't. Why?
No reason. Well, gotta move. See you later.
Morelli waved him on, and he set off. But by the time he reached the last wagon, there was still no Davis in evidence. Frowning, Jason made his way back up to the gate.
Where the hell has he got to? Man, don't just disappear like that. Especially a man as big as Samson Davis.
By the time he'd walked clear back to the office, checking in every public building along the way, he still hadn't turned anything up. He was angry with Marshal Todd, mad at Samson Davis, incensed by the town fathers and their damn water tower, and pretty much fit to be tied with the whole town and its situation.
I should have just gone. Should have just left them to take care of the Indians by themselves. They didn't need me. I never should have turned Cleo around and come back.
Jason slumped down in his chair and closed his eyes, and images flooded into his head. Him having a laugh with some boys outside the school library. Him checking the grade sheets and finding nothing but A's beside his name. Him applying for a position and shaking hands with the president of the company. Him getting married. But the girl he pictured, the woman who became his wife, was Megan McDonald. And when they rode home after the wedding, it was to Fury and the little house on 2nd Street, where he lived now. Fury had taken root in his fantasies, and there was no stopping it now. He went back outside, and Abe Todd practically ran smack into him on the sidewalk.
Where have you been?
Out looking for you. Where you been?
Outside, sifting through the wagons, looking for Davis.
No luck?
Nope.
Well, come with me then.
He started on down the walk, with Jason tagging at his heels. Jason reminded himself of the dog Hannibal, who most of the time had been given free rein of the town these past few days. He didn't like it, and he made himself catch up with Abe, then matched him stride for stride.
Where are we going?
Saloon.
Jason stopped suddenly, and Abe did too.
What?
Well, I'm not off duty yet.
Hell, Jason, I ain't asking you there for a drink. I'm just taking a look-see.
I was in there earlier. He's not there.
People move around.
Oh, all right.
Jason started walking again. Davis was in the saloon, all right, sitting at a back corner table all alone and slogging down whiskeys like they were sarsaparillas. Up on the second floor balcony, Rafe's door was closed, which Jason profoundly hoped meant that Rafe was locked up behind it.
Don't worry. I told Rafe to stay put in there.
Like you think he'll listen?
Abe steered Jason to an empty table.
He listened. I'm gonna go have a few words with your friend Davis. You got a clear line of fire from that chair?
Jason checked and nodded.
Keep an eye peeled.
Abe took off for Davis's table. Jason watched while Abe approached and pulled out a chair across from Davis, his back to the room, as if he owned the place in general and Davis's table in particular. He couldn't make out Davis's face, but something told him that Davis wasn't too happy with the situation. Abe leaned forward and started to talk, and the words, while Jason couldn't hear them, appeared to be delivered in a sharp, no-nonsense manner. Davis said something, then Abe, then Davis again, and then Abe pushed back from the table and stood up. He said a few more words to Davis, then turned his back on him and made his way back over to Jason.
Wish I could have heard that.
No, you don't. The man's bulldog stubborn and bear nasty. He's gonna stay if he has to move here permanent.
Not quite what I wanted to hear.
Didn't thrill me none either.
Abe waved a hand and a pretty girl showed up as if by magic.
Order, sir?
Couple shots of bourbon.
Coming up.
Look, I'm still on the...
No, you ain't. Look at your pocket watch.
Jason did. It was 5 past the hour. Annoyed, he put it away.
So, now what?
Guess we wait.
Abe shoved some change toward the serving girl who'd just brought the drinks.
Same thing again.
Must have been thirsty work talking to him.
Abe picked up his drink and tossed it back in one gulp. Jason hadn't touched his yet, and he'd only taken a sip when the girl showed up with the second round.
Got me an idea. How'd you like to be a U.S. Marshal?
Me? No way, Abe. Not in a million years.
Why not?
Because then I'd be responsible for Matt McDonald's Indians and shepherding the wagons over to the next man and, well, a whole load of stuff that I'm not prepared to take on.
You chicken?
No, I'm not. Jesus, I don't even want to be the town's marshal. Never aimed for it. I belong back east taking exams, not out here in the middle of nowhere riding shepherd over folks who don't even give a good goddamn.
Just thought I'd ask. Get your knickers in a knot over it.
Before he walked home, Jason checked into the office just to make certain that Ward was on the job. He was, but so was Wash Keough.
Blast you, Jason! What's wrong with you taking out one of your guns before I have me a chance at him?
I didn't take him, Wash. Abe Todd did, and was kind of surprised for everybody.
Wash dug into his pocket, then produced his nugget.
Jesus, Wash, you been carrying that thing around in your pocket this whole time?
Ward was still intent on the papers before him.
Ward, I thought you were going to take him up to the bank.
Ward lifted his head and his focus fell on the gargantuan nugget in Wash's hand. He dropped his pen and his mouth hung open momentarily.
Mother of God! Wash, you said you were going.
What'd I tell you? You bring me into town without no sleep and then you turn around and shoot the fella I was here to take care of. You beat everything, you know that?
Wash stomped past Jason, pocketed the gold again, his pants listing with its weight, and walked out into the street and toward the saloon. Ward fumbled in his pocket.
I need a smoke.
I'll join you.
The two men sat in the office smoking for a while.
You ever seen anything like that in your whole cotton-picking life?
Jason just shook his head. It could have been pyrite, but he figured himself a good enough judge to tell the difference. If he knew where Wash had been digging, he would have been out of town like a shot. No, he wouldn't. It was Wash's gold.
Christ! Now I know what they mean by having larceny in your heart. How much you suppose a thing like that's worth?
Have to have it assayed. But I'd say somewhere in the thousands, maybe tens of thousands.
Christ!
First thing in the morning, you make him go over to the bank and have Megan put it in the vault. I mean it this time, all right? I don't like him walking around town with it on him, liable to fall through a hole in his britches.
Check, boss.
Jason stubbed out his smoke and stood up.
I'm going home.
Later that same evening, while Jason was at home having one of those good Jenny dinners, and Wash was still at the saloon, Ward Wanamaker was making his evening rounds, checking that everything that was supposed to be locked up was locked up, and that everything was pretty much in its place. He paused halfway through when he got to the gate. It was being left open at night these days, in case something should happen, heaven forfend, and the wagon train members needed to get inside in a hurry. He leaned against one of the posts and rolled, then lit a smoke, breathing out a hazy plume into the crisp night air. The sun had barely set, but nights on the desert were cold, and this looked like it was going to be a real toe and finger freezer. He was almost finished with his smoke and about to stamp it out and get on with his rounds when he spied movement out there in the expanse to the south. He waited a moment, which was just enough time for the movement to turn into a horse and rider. A rider who was moving like a bat out of hell.
Oh my God, there's Indians! Help me! Help! 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 Hey, you,
he was yelling something too, but Ward couldn't make it out. All he could hear was somebody shouting something, and all he could see was that same somebody flapping his arms and fanning his horse and riding like 60.
Who the heck's that?
Ward looked up and saw Riley, the wagon master.
Dunno. Mighty odd. Guess we'll have to wait till he gets close enough that we can hear what he's... saying, and don't go getting yourself in an uproar. I reckon it's just one of MacDonald's men. Apache don't attack at night, but MacDonald sees Indians like other men see tumbleweeds.
Riley folded his arms and stared out toward the rider galloping toward them.
He's gonna ruin that horse.
Probably. Reckon I'd best go round up the marshal. The U.S. Marshal, that is. Me and Jason, we ain't got no jurisdiction out at MacDonald's ranch.
Well, good luck then.
Riley wandered back toward his wagon while Ward started down the street to the saloon.
That dang Matt MacDonald sure has a way of messing up my evenings.
Abe Todd was minding his own business, getting smashed at the saloon and keeping an eye on Sampson Davis, when the batwing doors burst in and two men shouldered through. Ward was one of them, and he raised a hand to acknowledge him. He didn't expect Ward to come over to his table, but that's what he did next, followed by the shorter man who'd come through the door with him. The shorter man stared at the badge on Abe's chest.
Sorry, Abe.
The other man, a boy really, elbowed Ward aside.
I'm Stephen McCord, sir, and I work for Mr. Matt MacDonald down south at the Double M, and we got Indians, a pass castle of Indians, and he sent me straight to come and get help right away. And the town law ain't never helped any, so I come straight to tell you.
His long sentence finished at last, he leaned forward, catching himself on the tabletop as if he were exhausted. Abe didn't move except to tilt his elbow and take another slug of bourbon.
At night? You got Apache attacking you at night?
McCord nodded his head frantically.
Anybody actually shoot an arrow at you?
What? No, but they're coming. Mr. McDonald, he's seen their dust cloud on the horizon.
He did he?
Yes, sir. Come on, time's wasting.
Abe leaned back in his chair and Ward sat down, probably to watch the show. Abe let the edification begin.
Son, the Apache aren't attacking your boss's ranch. They don't attack at night, for one thing. And for another, if they wanted to attack you, you wouldn't see them coming. They'd just be there, and you'd be dead. And wishing you were.
But...
No buts about it. Now go on back home. Or sit down and have a drink, your choice. But I ain't running out there like some dumb cluck with my head cut off.
But...
Sorry, Steve, but that's all she wrote.
Ward stood up, putting a hand on both of the young man's shoulders and turning him back toward the door.
Your boss's imagination is running off with him again. That's all there is to it. And this time, we ain't gonna play, all right?
Steve McCord, a nice kid who had come in with the wagon train before last, walked out the door, dejected.
And you walked that horse for at least a mile, McCord.
But then, Jason would be so tickled that he'd got rid of MacDonald's rider that he wouldn't mind. And so, Ward signaled the serving gal and indicated a beer.
Well, that was right masterful.
Nothing but the truth.
Abe leaned farther back in his chair, and for a second, Ward thought he was going to go to sleep. But when the barmaid brought Ward's beer, Abe sat up.
One more round, honey.
That kid's gonna be in a peck of trouble when he gets back to the ranch alone. Matt McDonald ain't somebody you want to cross.
Not my problem. The U.S. Marshal's office ain't for babysitting.
Ward nodded. The Marshal's office must be for getting drunk instead, he thought. Then wiped the idea from his mind. He wasn't there to judge Abe Todd. He was there to have a beer. He took another sip. He wondered what Jason would have done, though.
What's wrong?
Nothing. Why?
Because you didn't say two words during dinner or when you came into the house. Something's eating at you, Jason. Anybody could see that.
It's just... sometimes I wish I wasn't Marshall. Sometimes I wish we hadn't come west at all.
Why? I like it here.
I know you do, Jenny. And to tell you the truth, that's the only reason I'm still here.
For me? Jason, you don't need to stay for me. I'm fine.
Well, you wouldn't be so fine if the Apache attacked again. Or if you married some no account. Or if you...
Stop it. You can stop listing things.
That's what you think.
Jenny stared at him through the darkness. He wasn't going to find any comfort here tonight. He stood up.
Where are you going?
To the saloon. I feel like a drink.
Jason didn't know how he felt, truth be told. He guessed it all had to do with the people and the situation. But he was shaken up, no doubt about it. He just felt itchy, like something bad was going to happen, something he didn't have any control over, and he didn't like it. He was used to having control over most things that mattered, but not the thing that was coming, whatever it was. He rolled himself a smoke and started on down the street, lighting his cigarette as he walked. The smoke tasted more brittle than usual, oddly dirty, and he almost put it out. But by then, he was on the walk outside the saloon.
Ah, crap.
The first thing he did was check the place that Davis had staked out earlier. And sure enough, he was still there, still tossing back his rot gut like there wasn't enough in the world to get him drunk. Wasn't enough to even make him stagger a little.
Jason!
He looked over to see Ward and Abe slouched at a table quite near him. He walked on over. Abe looked a little drunk, and Ward was with him, nursing a beer and not impaired in the slightest, his hand still raised in a wave. He couldn't ride Ward about the beer. He'd had one himself today, and intended to have a few more tonight.
Wash going home?
To my house, yeah. And I guess you heard, though I can't figure how. Did you come on down to celebrate with us?
Jason pulled out a chair and sat down.
Well, heard what?
About McDonald, of course.
What about him?
Ward went on to explain the evening's excitement in great detail and finished up by including Abe's response to the situation. Abe, on the other hand, spent the entire time staring over toward Davis's table. For a moment, Jason aped him. Davis was still sitting there, drinking and not much else. Jason glanced up toward the second floor, saw that Rafe's door was still closed, and quickly looked away in case Davis had seen him. His attention returned to the table before him.
Well, I guess whatever works, works.
Amen. This Miss Electa your sister works for, what's her story?
Well, she's one of the Morton girls, the unmarried one. She teaches our school. Why?
I'm just wondering, that's all. No warrants or anything?
On Miss Electa? Certainly not.
Sorry, had to ask.
Don't you think that's a riot, Jason?
What?
Christ! About what Abe said to young Steve McCord, McDonald's man?
Oh, yeah, pretty slick.
Well, you don't need to sound so all-fired excited about it.
I'm sorry, Ward, I got a lot on my mind.
We all.
Samson Davis finally gave up and went home, leaving Jason, Ward, and Abe in the saloon with nobody to keep an eye on. But Matt McDonald's worries were beginning to trouble Jason. It would be about Matt's speed to have something happen, and just when he'd worn out the local law, which, actually, he'd done a long time ago, but Jason just kept on humoring him. He wasn't tired, not nearly ready for bed, so he stood up.
Guess I'll ride out to the Double M, just to make certain.
Ward stared at him as he rose. He looked like he was wavering between riding along just to make sure that his boss didn't do something stupid, like go the rest of the way crazy, or just slugging him in the jaw to keep him in town. But in the end, he stood up too.
Oh, all right, count me in.
Well, you boys are gonna ride out there for nothing. I reckon I might as well tag along, get the lay of the land.
He knocked back the last of his drink and stood up. They readied their horses and left town within a half hour. It was dark, but the moon was bright, and there were plenty of stars shedding their light, so Jason set the pace at a slow lope.
Damn! Yeah!
Jason fanned Cleo into a hard gallop, and Ward and Abe were close behind. They came over the ridge just before they hit Matt's ranch. They saw arrows hitting the sides of the ranch house.
I'll be double damn and deep fried. Yeah. Get him!
Abe slid off Boy and sent him back down to the shelter of the ridge behind them. Ward and Jason followed suit with their horses.
Why are they attacking at night? They ain't supposed to do that.
Search me.
The three of them were down in the brush now, hidden from observers, and sighting carefully through the weeds and cactus. There weren't many Indians, Jason was sure of that. Just a handful, really. He made out three more over in the weeds, and one shadowy figure over by the barn. He figured if he could see three in the brush, there were at least three more he couldn't see. That still didn't make a raiding party. These few had probably broken off from a larger group and were operating on their own. Anyway, he hoped so. He'd hate to run this crew off and have the main force show up in their wake. The few left in the brush slithered off, and Jason didn't see them again until they'd mounted their ponies and were making a getaway into the distance.
Hello, the house!
Jason didn't want to get himself shot by Matt McDonald, who'd probably take him for an Apache.
Who's out there?
The law, Matthew! We ran your Indians off and we're looking for a drink. You want to thank us, don't you?
Jason knew full well that Matt didn't want to thank him, but he got a kick out of asking anyway.
Come on down.
Sounds friendly enough.
Optimist. Ward, you all right?
Yeah, I'm going to get the horses.
All right, see you in a few.
Ward traipsed back through the weeds and over the rise while Abe and Jason walked down the slope toward the ranch house. More lights went on in the house as somebody lit lanterns, and soon they were on the porch. Two ranch hands came out past them before Matt stepped to the fore. He looked as worn out as Jason felt. Jason nodded.
Matt, I'd like you to meet Deputy U.S. Marshal Abe Todd. Abe, this is Matt McDonald.
Abe stuck out his hand, and Matt took it and shook it enthusiastically.
Finally, some helpful law.
He ushered them into the house.
Tell me, Mr. McDonald, what...
It's Matt. Just Matt.
All right, then. Matt, just what did you do to those Apache to make them mad enough to try storming the ranch at night?
What, me? Nothing. They've been thieving my cattle. They've been threatening us with their presence. I haven't done one single thing to aggravate them.
Jason had already stretched out in an easy chair, and now Abe joined him, making himself comfortable on a settee across the room.
All right. You ain't done a single thing. Somebody say something about a drink?
Matt left the room, headed for the kitchen, and Jason checked his pocket watch. It was still early.
I'll get it.
Ward entered, looking as thirsty as Jason thought he would. All three horses were hitched to the rail outside.
You pitching a fit?
Near to it.
How near?
About an inch and a half.
Great. And one for me, Matthew! That ought to push him the rest of the way over.
Smiling, Ward sat on the other end of the settee and nodded his hello to Abe. Back in town, the lawman had not left unnoticed. In his front room on the second story of the boarding house, Samson Davis had seen the three lawmen walk past when they went to get their horses, then ride out of fury at a slow lope. It didn't take him long to figure out what he wanted to do. Well, not wanted exactly. But if he was to get what he came for, he'd have to do it. He'd walked up to the livery and saddled his horse, then ridden out after them. He was halfway there when he thought better of it. They were shooting it out with someone or other up ahead, and that should keep them busy long enough. Long enough for what he needed, anyway. He turned around and rode back. But when he got there, he didn't put his horse away. Instead, he tied him to the rail outside the boarding house, gave him a pat on the neck, and walked the rest of the way down the street to the saloon. He figured Lynch would be downstairs by this time, having figured he'd gone to bed. He paused outside the window, back from the glass, and looked over the tables. There was a different bartender on duty now, replacing that nosy one who always swore up and down that Lynch wasn't there when Davis knew damn well that he was hiding upstairs in one of those rooms. And there was Lynch, sitting at a table with four other fellows toward the back of the main floor, playing poker and having himself a high old time.
Not for long.
He planned to clap them on Lynch's wrists first thing, then get him out of fury, kicking and screaming if he had to, just as long as he got him out of that town marshal's reach.
Why does everyone have to like Lynch so much?
He couldn't see the good in liking anybody with Lynch's reputation. It just didn't make sense. But it wouldn't be long before Lynch's charming days were over. He was going to get him out of town, then shoot him deader than the proverbial doornail. He started for the batwing doors, shoving them open and walking through.
Thank you, fellas.
He glanced at the barkeep, who apparently had been coached by the fellow that worked days, because he brought a shotgun up from behind the bar and stood stock still, staring straight at Davis.
Flies. Nothing but flies to be brushed away.
Nodding at the barkeep, he began to slowly make his way toward Lynch's table. Lynch, who hadn't seen him yet, had just won the pot and was raking in the money. A big pot, too. He rubbed again at his back pocket just before he got to Lynch's table. He stood quietly on Lynch's left for a moment. This was as close to Lynch as he'd been in 2 years, and took it in.
Rafe Lynch.
Two of the other players looked up, and Lynch twisted toward him.
Yeah?
When he saw it was Samson Davis, he uncontrollably jumped a little. A slow grin started to creep across Davis's mouth.
Your buddy, the marshal, rode out of town to the south a little while back. Seems to me he's got his hands full and won't be back for a spell.
Lynch stood up and faced him. Davis hadn't expected that, but he didn't give any ground either.
Get out of here. Get out of here and leave off pestering me, Davis.
I got as much right to be in here as anybody. More than you, I reckon. Now don't you make a fuss. Come on with me.
No.
Davis was ready. He dug out the handcuffs and snagged Lynch's right wrist with one ring, snapping it closed, and held Lynch's hand high, well away from his gun. But Lynch made no attempt to retrieve it.
Are you trying to kidnap me, Davis?
Maybe.
Well, kidnapping's against the law, even in Arizona territory.
Just shut up and come with me.
No, you're keeping me from my poker game, Davis.
Davis felt the unmistakable imprint of a sawed-off shotgun press into his back.
Leave go of him, mister. I won't say it again.
The shotgun's barrel nudging him in the back, Davis slowly let Lynch's hand down, then let go of the other handcuff ring.
You're making a big mistake.
This man's a murderer. He's wanted in California.
Well, he ain't so much as spoke horse to a dog in Arizona, far as I know. Now back off.
The gun barrel jabbed Davis again. At the very back of the bar, unnoticed and unrecognized, Ezra Welk watched all this with great interest. It seemed there was a lot more to Fury than a body would think. Welk watched as, the tables turned, the man called Lynch slapped the big man's own cuffs on him, then marched him out of the saloon and across the street to the marshal's office.
Crazy little white spot in the road.
Jason sat, sipping at the good whiskey, which came from McDonald's stash, and getting madder by the second. Matt had been complaining to Abe for the past 10 minutes, maybe more, and nonstop. He'd been protesting his mistreatment by the Apache, and mostly by the local sheriff's office, meaning Jason. Abe had already very patiently explained several times just why Matt's spread wasn't in Jason's jurisdiction, and every explanation was either ignored or talked around by Matt. Finally, Abe got up, signaling to the other men to rise too.
You know what, McDonald? You just don't listen. And you really are a jackass. Gotta let folks know where you stand. Some folks take more convincing than others.
Abe led the way to the front door, with Jason and Ward bringing up the rear.
Ward, can you hold it down till we get out of earshot of the house anyway?
Ward reined sharply away and toward the north, toward Fury. He dug his heels into his horse, and this time he was leading the way, with Abe and Jason trying to keep pace with the cackling deputy.
Man, you sure told him, Abe. I should have done that a long time ago.
Yeah, you should have. How come you didn't?
Jason shrugged. Actually, it was because he thought it might be a misuse of his power as marshal. He certainly wasn't afraid of Matt, or what he could do physically. Jason had it on him in spades, and they both knew it. They'd both known it for years, even before the original wagon train had departed from Kansas City.
I did once, and once was enough. Afraid if I hit him again, I might kill him.
He's sure a tender one. That glass jaw of his is any indication.
Abe started to roll a smoke, and Jason and Ward followed suit. It was a good time for a smoke.
You got any idea why in the hell those Apache attacked at night?
Ward shook his head.
He's done something. Something to piss him off big time. Don't know what yet, but I'll find out. I'd like to ride back down there tomorrow and talk to his men.
Fine by me.
You want company? Be glad to tag along.
Nope. Town needs you to get some sleep so you can keep an eye on Davis tomorrow night. Thank you kindly for the offer.
Ward tilted his head, then nodded. But Abe had done the damage already. He'd reminded Jason that he'd left the town with no one to watch it and Samson Davis on the loose. Back in Fury, Rafe Lynch was having himself a high old time. The bartender, being inexperienced in such things but knowing that the jail was the place for people who tried to kidnap other people, had relieved Davis of all his firearms, poked through his pockets until he found the key to the handcuffs, which Rafe promptly let himself out of, then handed him over to Rafe for incarceration. Rafe had walked Davis, wearing his own manacles, across the street, then locked him in a cell. He was currently sitting behind Jason's desk with his feet propped up and a cigarette smoldering between his fingers.
You know, Samson, I ought to be real mad at you trailing me here and trying to grab me out of the saloon. But I guess I can forgive you. After all, you're wrong about me killing your brother-in-law. You ought to be going after the doc for that. But I reckon you got your mind all righteous and set about like a dog after a jackrabbit. You know, a man's got to do what a man's got to do and all that crap.
Rafe noticed that his smoke had almost gone out and took a long drag off it before he stamped it out in Jason's ashtray. Samson wasn't listening, as far as he could tell. Wasn't even looking at him, and he hadn't since he set foot in the cell. He just sat on the edge of his cot, staring at the floor.
In fact, I figure you owe me. Your brother-in-law stole my daddy's gold shares in one of them shady poker games of his. Either that or he held a gun on until he signed. And then he killed him. Shot him right through the head. Now, that weren't very nice, was it?
No reply from the cell, but Rafe hadn't expected one.
And on top of that, now you're keeping me from a good poker game. I figured win big tonight.
I ain't keeping you, Lynch.
Yeah, you are. Somebody has to be here when the marshal comes back, and that somebody is me. I don't like you much, Davis. Well, come to think of it, I reckon I don't like you at all. But if you keep on hounding me, looks like somebody's gonna end up dead. Smart money's on you.
Rafe lit a new cigarette and leaned back in the chair to smoke it. It tasted damn good.
Why are we pushing these horses, Jason? What's so important that we gotta get back to it?
Samson Davis, Rafe Lynch.
Oh, they can take care of themselves. And Walsh is in town.
Don't count on him.
With that, Jason pulled ahead at full length.
Ours ain't the reason why.
What?
Abe just shook his head, then lifted a hand and pointed forward. The town's lights, from a bonfire here and a window or two there, were coming into sight. They soon reached the town gates and the wagon train and rode on through. Jason didn't take Cleo home as usual, though. He rode on down to the office and dismounted.
You walk her out for me, Ward?
Guess so.
Ward and Abe dismounted, and Ward gathered the reins of all three horses and started up the street, leading them. The office lights were on, and when they walked a little closer, Jason saw Rafe Lynch sitting behind his desk, big as life and smoking a cigarette.
What in the hell?
Ain't nobody gonna go see if you don't.
Yeah.
Jason stepped up on the boardwalk with Abe right behind him. Rafe didn't move an inch when Jason shoved in the door.
Howdy, boys. I brung you a prisoner.
Well, I'll be double damned.
The hell happened?
You best ask the bartender across the street. He saw more of the deal than I did, and he's the one to turn Davis into me. I am only a vessel.
Abe went across the street while Jason stayed at the office, booting Rafe out of his chair and lighting a smoke of his own. If this kept up, he was going to smoke himself like a ham, only inside out. Ward walked in much earlier than Jason had expected.
Horses all right?
Yep. They weren't as used up as we thought. Left Cleo over in your barn. Stripped her tack.
Well, thanks, Ward.
Ward suddenly realized that they were not alone. He nodded at Rafe, then looked toward the cell for a moment.
Davis?
Jason nodded.
Well, Big Chief, what we gonna do now?
Wait for Abe.
20 minutes later, Abe came back, bringing the story of Rafe's near kidnapping and the barkeeper's bravery in a time of crisis.
Well, I'll be damned.
Lou's playing it up for all it's worth, isn't he?
Regular John Wilkes Booth, far as the acting goes, anyhow. I seen him once in Baltimore, you know.
For real? You get any indication what was to come?
Nope. Damn good performance, though. Can't recollect the name of the play just now.
Can we get back to the business at hand, gentlemen?
They all stared toward Davis's cell. He was nothing but a dark shadow, sitting in profile to them on the edge of the bunk, hat pulled low, face down, seemingly fascinated with the floor between his boots. Abe, who had been sitting on the edge of Jason's desk, stood up.
Gotta think on it, but it may be a case for the U.S. Marshal's Office. Attempted kidnapping, that is. You boys be up for an answer come the morning?
Jason nodded, and Abe let himself out and soberly walked across the street to Kendall's boarding house. When Jason finally sat down in his office, Abe was nowhere to be found. According to Ward, he hadn't been by the office and nobody'd seen him. Samson Davis, at least, was still in his cell and silently ate the breakfast that Jenny had made for him. Careful to keep it kosher, of course. Abe finally stuck his head in the door at about lunchtime.
Ain't come to a decision yet, Jason.
Jason was both relieved and disappointed, but if anybody had asked him, he couldn't have said why. He walked over to the saloon with Abe and rounded up Rafe, prying him loose from a game of blackjack, which he'd been winning all morning, and they all hiked up to the cafe to grab some lunch. Jenny had sent him off to work with a chicken sandwich, but he figured to eat that later on. Talking was more important now. And Rafe and Abe were both full of talk. Unfortunately, mostly stories about Rafe's daddy and Rafe's childhood and Rafe's growing up, and no speculation about just what the hell they were going to do with Samson Davis.
Where you been this morning, Abe? Couldn't turn you up, and I about turned over every stone in town.
Reckon you didn't think to look where I was.
Where was that?
In the schoolhouse.
What the heck were you doing in school? Hey, you weren't romancing my baby sister, were you?
Don't go getting yourself in an uproar, Jason. That Jenny's a good kid. She took over classes for Electa while we went out back and talked.
You went outside with Miss Morton?
Ain't gonna be Miss Morton for long.
Rafe slugged him in the arm.
You old dog.
But you haven't even met her yet.
I was up here yesterday for a spell, and I seen her the day I rode in. Damn handsome woman.
But still, that's hardly a basis for...
Jason, my pa knew my ma for about 12 hours before they got hitched. And they're still hitched this very day. Sometimes lasting love happens fast.
Maybe, but...
No buts about it.
Abe signaled the waiter.
3 pieces of apple pie with cheddar. We're celebrating.
But did she say yes? My gosh, I sure couldn't tell anything from the way she acted. I mean, not that she'd just been proposed to.
Yes, she said yes. Except she wants him to go ask her father first.
Why? I mean, she's got to be like 40 years old or something.
30. And 30's not that old if you're still somebody's kid. You got any more of that cake?
Jenny sliced off another piece and practically threw it at him.
How can you eat cake at a time like this?
It's good cake. And what do you mean a time like this?
When your only sister is about to have to take on teaching the whole school by herself. They'll move to Prescott, you know. They'll be gone, and I'll be left with Cyrano Jones and Junior Krebs and that whole crowd. Of course, they'll be graduating in June and out on the town, and they'll be yours to deal with. But there are others coming up that are going to be just as difficult, if not worse. And what am I going to do, Jason?
Well, you go on like we all do, Jenny.
He knew it wasn't comforting, but it was the best he could come up with, considering the circumstances.
Oh, you're no help at all!
She ran from the room, slamming her bedroom door closed behind her.
Yeah, I know.
Jason pulled his cake toward him and dug in. It really was good cake. Later, on the porch, he wondered if Jenny was just being selfish, or perhaps jealous. Or maybe she was really, truly scared of teaching the class on her own. In the end, he supposed it didn't matter. If Miss Morton left town, Jenny was stuck. Jason wasn't crazy about the idea either. Some of those boys that they taught were big galoots, sullen and brutish, and far beyond the normal age for school, having been held back a few times. And Jenny was small, almost tiny.
If one of them got her cornered...
He stubbed out his cigarette to take his mind off of it, but it didn't work. He was still brooding when he went into the house. He stopped in the kitchen to eat yet another piece of cake, and it was while he was thus occupied that his sister came down the hall.
Jason, I'm sorry. I don't mean to act like a baby or a sore loser. I wish Miss Morton all the best, I really do. This is a silly time for me to be thinking about myself.
Jenny turned to go back down the hall, then suddenly spun back.
Are you eating another piece of cake?
Yeah, but it's good.
Nobody likes a fat Marshall.
She turned again and went back to her room. Jason watched her retreat, then stared down at the cake and gave a thoughtful gaze at his belly.
I've got a long way to go before I'm fat.
That night, long after Ward had made his final rounds and Jason was fast asleep, Deputy U.S. Marshal Abraham Todd sat in the far corner of his room, smoking. He'd given up counting them a long time ago, but he knew he was almost out of papers. When he got married, he was thinking about resigning. The job wasn't fair to a wife. He'd have to spend so much time away from home, and there was always the chance that he could be killed. But then, the job had been his life up until now. Maybe he couldn't just drop it that easily, for thinking about it and actually doing it were two different things. He took a final drag off his smoke and stubbed it out in the ashtray, then methodically began to roll another. It was the next to the last paper, he noticed. He decided that he'd ride out to her father's ranch in the morning and ask his permission to marry his daughter, just like Electa had requested. It never crossed his mind that Mr. Morton would say no. Electa was so ripe, she was going to burst if somebody didn't marry her, and quick. He stubbed out the smoke and, rising, hauled his carcass over to the bed and lay down. The silly smile plastered over his weary face.
Oh, Electa. My Electa.
It's down by the jail.
Crap!
Jason sprang up from the bed and tugged on his clothes. Jason ran from the house and up the street, headed south toward the office.
Ward!
Jason shoved open the jailhouse doors. The lamp on his desk was lit, and there were signs of a struggle, and Samson Davis's cell was empty.
Damn it! Ward!
Rushing forward, he nearly tripped over Ward's body. He knelt to it, saw that he was still breathing, but that he had one bullet hole, bleeding profusely, in his chest, and another in his shoulder.
Oh, dear God.
He went back to the door.
Dr. Morelli, Ward's been shot!
He scurried back inside again and knelt beside Ward. His deputy's breathing was shallow, but steady. He said a silent prayer that Ward would make it. Jason had no idea what they would do without him, and waited for the doctor to show up. Morelli was there faster than he could have hoped, dressed in his nightclothes but carrying his black bag.
What happened?
Don't know. The shots woke me. But somebody was galloping hell-bent for leather out of town when I was running up here. And Davis is gone.
I heard the shots, too. There were four of them altogether.
So Ward fired back. He's a dead shot, Doc. At least one of those slugs of his had to connect.
We'll hope. Right now, help me get him across the street. He needs surgery right away.
Just as Jason and Morelli managed to get Ward halfway up, Abe arrived. Gun out, ready for anything. But he stuck it back in its holster once he took in the situation.
Oh, Christ! Not Ward, is it?
Not yet. Give us a hand with him, all right?
Abe grabbed Ward around the middle, and the three of them managed to get the deputy across the street and into Morelli's surgery. Morelli ushered them back out into the waiting room and closed the drape between them.
Davis did it, didn't he?
Morelli said he heard four shots, and only two of them are in Ward. One's in the wall beside the clock, which means that Davis has got one of them in him.
How the hell did he get a gun?
Good question.
Where'd he go?
Out of town, riding south.
What are we waiting for, then?
Abe's eagerness fired up Jason, rather than sinking him down into deeper despair, and he jumped up and headed out the door and home to saddle up Cleo. Once Cleo was tacked up, and in record time, Jason rode up to the livery to find not only Abe, but Rafe waiting for him. Jason eyed Rafe.
You sure you want to come?
Of course I'm sure,
but...
Let's go.
Rafe wheeled his mount and took off through the gates, heading due south.
How'd he know where to go?
I told him.
They followed Rafe nearly all the way to the Double M, where he slowed up and searched in the dawning light for a hint in the brush. He finally found one and held up his hand, pointing to the west.
This way.
Jason and Abe followed, although it was obvious that Abe had more confidence in Rafe's tracking skills than Jason had. As for Jason, he was busy being torn up by Ward's near death and praying that he'd survive. This would kill Jenny, he knew. It was already killing him.
Damn the West, anyway. It's nothing but a place where men come to die when they could have stayed back east and lived long, productive lives.
Rafe suddenly reined up. Jason and Abe did, too.
What?
He's up ahead.
Of course he's up ahead. We're following him.
No, right up ahead. Behind those rocks on the right.
He indicated a tumble of large boulders, each as tall as a man, if not taller.
Why doesn't he shoot us right now?
Sun's in his eyes. He's waiting for us to get closer or the sun to rise a little higher, whichever comes first.
I say we don't give him time for either one. We sneak around the far side of those rocks, way back up there on the north.
Better than waiting to get shot like Ward. Come on, Rafe.
Rafe turned toward them, skirted a bed of manzanita, and began to follow them back to the north. They took a wide, circuitous route that Jason hoped would keep them out of range, pistol range anyway, and at last came to the northernmost point of the rock pile. Jason signaled the men to be quiet and on their guard. He couldn't be certain that Davis hadn't figured out their plan. Jason dismounted, ground-tied Cleo, and tentatively walked to the edge of the last boulder. He peeked around the back side of it. He saw nothing. Not a man, not a horse, nothing. But there were plenty of nooks and crannies in those boulders for Davis to hide in, and hide his horse in, too. He beckoned to Abe, who ground-tied Boy, too, and joined him.
Damn! You think he took off the other way while we was being all sneaky?
No, we would have heard him. Sam carries like crazy out here.
I know. Well, who goes first?
I do. It was my deputy that he gunned down.
Yeah, but that was back in your jurisdiction.
Rafe suddenly appeared between.
What are you two cooking up over there?
Shh!
You want Davis, he's out here.
Jason beat Abe to the edge of the rocks and, sure enough, saw the silhouette of a rider jogging further south.
You any good with that rifle of yours, Abe?
Yeah, but Rafe's a mite better.
Rafe, consider yourself temporarily deputized.
But I...
He wants you to shoot Davis. He's making like he's no good with a rifle.
Well, I'm not. Hurry up. He's getting away.
Okay.
Rafe pulled his rifle from the saddle boot. Jason watched nervously as he sighted on Davis. The blast took them all by surprise, Rafe included. But it took no one more off guard than Samson Davis. He continued on a few steps, then slid awkwardly from his horse, disappearing into the tall weeds with a slump. Abe clapped Rafe on the shoulder.
Hell of a shot, kid. Hell of a shot. Your daddy'd be spit-polished proud.
I about forgot how loud it was.
Well, let's go pick him and his horse up.
What if he's not dead? What if he's just lying there in the weeds waiting for us to get close enough for him to pick us off?
Good thinking, Jason. But if he is, there ain't nothing we can do about it except get shot. Come on, you two, let's move.
Davis proved not to be dead, but he wasn't far from it. They loaded him on his horse, tied him down after they relieved him of his firearms, and Jason found the gun he'd used to shoot Ward. It was a snub-nosed handgun, stuck down inside his boot, the one place Jason supposed Rafe and Lou hadn't patted down when Davis was arrested the first time. When Rafe saw the gun, he at least had the good grace to look sheepish. They started back, at a walk this time, not a gallop. Davis remained out cold, though Jason checked on him from time to time. His breathing was shallow but regular, so far as he could tell, and his color looked good, but he wasn't taking any chances. The next morning, Jason woke to horrible news. Ward was dead. He had passed during the night, Morelli had told Jenny, who was up and awake to answer the door when he dropped by. Morelli seemed upset, as did Jenny, but Jason, while he shed a silent tear or two, thanked God that at least Ward hadn't suffered at the end. He thanked him for Ward's life, and he thanked him for Ward's friendship, and for Ward's company, even though it had been short-lived. And then he prayed that God would let Davis live, so that Jason might have the pleasure of seeing him executed. Morelli wasn't looking forward to his next call, to check on Frank Solomonk's poor, spine-peppered back. He didn't have much hope for a positive outcome. He found the Solomonk's wagon surrounded by silently weeping women and dry-eyed men, doing their best to comfort their wives. The Solomonk's children were beneath the wagon, comforting each other, and he found Eliza Solomonk in the wagon, sitting quiet and pale beside her husband's body.
Eliza?
He leaned into the back of the wagon to get a better look at Frank. Even from this distance, he could tell Solomonk was dead. For one thing, there was the odor. But Frank had smelt of death long before he died. It was the pallor of the body, the utter and complete stillness of it.
May I come in?
Yes, doctor.
He climbed up and officially made certain that Frank had passed, during the night probably, then covered the head with a sheet and turned toward the new widow.
Eliza, would you like him to be buried here in Fury or out along the trail?
Once again, Ezra Welk started his day at the saloon. The town's beer and whiskey drinkers had him pretty much up to date on the town's recent goings-on, whether they knew it or not, leaving him continually surprised at the activity level in Fury, especially when he had nothing to do with it. Usually, he was the one responsible for any ruckus, and this was a change of pace for him. He was actually finding it pleasant. He kept one eye peeled in the direction of the marshal's office. The boy marshal had ridden out before dawn broke to the eastern horizon the day before, theoretically chasing after Samson Davis. Davis had supposedly shot up the deputy during the night, probably killing him. Hell, they should have done what had first come to Welk's mind, just taken Davis out and plugged him, the ugly bastard.
But then nobody asked me, did they? At least it's entertaining.
Davis had already killed that lanky deputy, taking him off Welk's possibilities list. But to look on the bright side, as his mother always used to say before sending him out to the woodshed to wait for another one of his father's beatings, they'd probably all end up killing each other anyway. He'd already decided to stick around for the finish. The Reverend Milcher picked up his order from Salmon Kendall's print shop, carried it home, unwrapped it, and spread the flyers out on one of the pew benches. The blue paper was just as fine as Salmon had promised it would be, and the printing, urging people to visit his church on Sunday, was perfect. It had taken all the change he could scrape together, but he looked on it as an investment. An investment in himself, and an investment in the good people of Fury. After scraping the papers back together, he first stood right outside the church's front door, handing out flyers and shaking hands with everyone who passed. He kept his face and demeanor affable, and found it was true. You did get more flies with honey than with vinegar. After a bit, he moved on down the street and stood in front of the cafe, where he glad-handed every passerby, handing out flyers and inviting them to Sunday's service. It was at about the time that he handed out the last flyer that he noticed the sky. It was darker than it should have been, filled with black and dark gray clouds, where before there had only been white wisps. A storm was coming, and coming soon. The wind was already whipping papers and bits of detritus along the street. Several of his own flyers passed him by. He put a hand atop his head to hold down his hat, then strode back up the street on his long, thin, black, panted legs to the church.
Lavinia! Storm's coming in again!
Before the weather turned bad, Deputy U.S. Marshal Abraham Todd had set out to the north to visit the Mortons and make his plea. He was as slicked up as it was possible to get in Fury, and he had even taken the time to groom his horse to a spit shine. He needed all the help he could get with Electa's folks. He reached the ranch in under an hour. It lay spread out before him, cupped in a wide valley, with two big houses and one slightly smaller, three barns, plenty of corrals, and the sounds and smells of cattle and hogs and horses and freshly mown hay. He instantly felt right at home. He dismounted in front of the house Electa had told him belonged to her folks, tied his horse to the rail, and climbed up the steps. He stood there a moment, shifting from boot to boot, tugging at his vest. The door was immediately answered by a small, attractive, smiling, gray-haired woman.
Yes?
Would you be the Miss Morton who's Electa Morton's mother?
I am indeed. And you must be Marshal Abraham Todd from Prescott.
Yes, and that's me. I wonder, could I speak to you and Mr. Morton about Electa?
She opened the door wider and stepped back.
You come inside, son.
He went inside and followed her down a wide hallway, then turned to the right into a large parlor. There sat, he supposed at any rate, Mr. Morton, reading a newspaper.
He's here, dear.
The paper lowered, and he got his first glimpse of Electa's father. A rugged man, serious in spirit, and probably honest as the day was long, with gray-white hair and a long beard to match. He was dressed in a farmer's togs, overalls, and a plaid shirt, and wore the farmer's badge, a tan line straight across his forehead where his hat band stopped. The hat itself hung neatly on a peg beside the doorway he'd just come through, which served to remind Abe that he was still wearing his hat. Belatedly, he swept it off his head, then ran his fingers through his hair to put it back into order.
Well, you look the part anyway, young man.
Sir?
Morton swept his hand toward a side chair.
Rest your bones, boy. I understand that you want to talk to me about Electa.
Abe collapsed into the chair more than he sat in it.
Yes, sir. First off, I want you to know that I'm a deputy U.S. Marshal and I make good money, enough to support us both and then some. Got some money saved, too, up in the Prescott Bank. Got near about $4,000 by my reckoning. My folks came from Massachusetts and their folks came from England and they moved to California when it was still under Spanish control. That's when they had me. Well, I grew up on stories about Zorro and Joaquin Murrieta and the like as my pa worked as a manager on a big hacienda for several years.
How do you feel about Electa? Do you love her? Promise to take care of her come drought or famine, hell or high water?
Mr. Morton,
I love your daughter with all my heart, and the rest of me, too. I'd die for her, but I'd rather live with her as a man and wife. With your permission, of course, sir.
There, he'd said it. Filled with relief, as well as a sickening sense of dread, he leaned back in the chair. For the first time, Morton smiled. He leaned forward in his chair.
You'll do fine, son.
Oh.